state and name the person identified as a relative of then-President John Mahama. Will government commit to investigating the alleged presidential relative named in U.S. Court recordings? I want you to hold on for me. I'll come back to you because I understand that we're having some technical challenges with our Zoom. So my producers will try to raise both of you once again on the telephone lines to continue the conversation. But if you're just joining us, the story we are bringing you to you this evening is that the MPP says it has no confidence in Attorney General Dominic Aini to independently investigate or prosecute the latest bribery allegations involving the AXA Energy Power Project. Well, speaking at the party's headquarters a while ago, MPP MP for Menchia South, Nana J. Bafwewa, who you heard from a while ago, says that the Attorney General's handling of several previous cases, including the Saglemi Housing Project and Unibank cases, has created concerns about selective accountability. Well, the MPP argues that because some of the people who could come under scrutiny are politically connected to the governing NDC, the investigation should be handled in a manner that inspires public confidence. Listen to him.
The MPP wishes to place on record its lack of confidence in the current Attorney General as far as the handling of this matter is concerned. Since assuming office on the 22nd of January 2025, Dr. Dominic Aini as Attorney General has been associated or has been keen with the filing of discontinuance or nulli prosequi or abandonment of prosecutions involving persons connected with both the previous government and the current NDC administration. We recall, in particular, the Attorney General's entry of nulli prosequi in matters including the SNIT scandal, the Saglemi Housing Projects case, the Cocoa Board related cases, the Unibank case, among others. These decisions have raised serious questions about accountability, the recovery of public funds, and the extent to which taxpayers may ultimately bear the financial consequences. In particular reference is the Unibank case, which forms part of a wider banking sector cleanup and involved substantial public expenditure. The Attorney General has not only come under criticism for failing to make critical disclosure before Parliament, the Attorney General has failed to make public details of the plea bargain that he purports to have entered into with the accused persons in the matter, thereby fueling concerns about transparency and accountability. Against this background, we do not believe that the Attorney General can command the confidence of the Ghanaian public to independently investigate or prosecute allegations involving officials or politically connected persons of the NDC. The repeated discontinuance of prosecutions involving persons associated with the NDC administration has created a reasonable perception of selective accountability. The Ghanaian people in this circumstance deserve investigations which they can have confidence in. One that is guided not by political affiliation, backed by the evidence.
That's the NPP MP for Minshia South, Nana J. Bafwewa, who is still on the telephone lines with me. Nana, don't go yet because I'll come back to you pretty shortly. But in the meantime, it's time for Newsnight. Gemma has the headlines. Gemma.
Coming up tonight, the National Road Safety Authority is piling pressure on authorities for urgent road signs and streetlights on the Ofankor stretch of the Accra Kumasi Highway following this morning's crash that killed 11 people and injured 13 others.
We also need our street lights to be functioning. Call on the authorities, i.e. the road agencies, to make sure the various street lights we have, all the other stakeholders who matter, and best to make sure all the street lights are functioning.
We have details, plus hear from the Ghana National Fire Service on the cause of the accident. Also, checks by Joy News today show that 8 out of every 10 cars on major roads in Accra are operating without number plates in direct violation of the law. Details as the National Road Safety Authority describes the trend as very disturbing.
In effect, it's a cause for worry for all of us that the operations at a point in time tend to pose us risk. But not all sorts of motorcycle riders can ply some portions of the road, especially the inner lanes of our dual carriages.
And later, a legal battle is brewing between Secha Dumasi Community Bank and Asokore Mampon Assembly over alleged unlawful demolition of the bank's building for 24-hour economy market in Kumasi.
The position of the bank was that either you integrate our building into the 24-hour economy project.
We have details as the bank cries out over destruction of physical banking equipment worth millions of cedis as staff now operate from a makeshift stall. Later in the NSMQ, more goodies in this year's edition as school rewards increase, with organizers introducing clean sheet prize for perfect true or false performance. We have more from the launch as organizers prepare to host this year's finals in Accra.
This year we're introducing the clean sheet. It's another tricky round where if the answer is not true, it is false. And if you get it wrong, you're penalized. If you're penalizing your opponent, so to speak, is able to get his or her right, it means that you've lost by 3 points.
In business,
government signs agreement with large-scale mining firms to secure 30% of their total gold output as the country moves to triple its international reserves.
And sports.
Sports minister reaffirms support for Black Queens amid protest over unpaid arrears.
And later on, you'll say, you know, Watcher is hogged, right? You know, Killer Willie is also hogged. But Gary Sawkins, someone is now selling it on a head pun. Will you stop them and buy it if you saw one? Share your views with us either through comments or send us a short voice note on our WhatsApp console. The number is 055-1111-997 and tag us on all social media handles. Ken.
Thank you very much, Gemma. Let's go back to Nana J. Bafwewa. He's the MPP MP for Minshia South. He's still on the line with me. Nana, one of the demands you made on behalf of your party earlier today is demanding the unmasking of a person described as a relative of President John Mahama in the U.S. court proceedings. As minority, do you have any indication who it could be?
My brother. I think that my colleague on the other side very respectfully misses the point. There's one thing which is not in dispute in all this matter. The fact that a person has been convicted in the United States of America not for discussing the payment of bribes. So the conviction is not because he discussed bribes, but to a payment of bribes. The bribes were paid to people who are in a position to make a decision on an AXA energy contract or business relationship with the government of the Republic of Ghana. This is the nutshell of the matter before us. The persons who are in a position to make a decision on this matter are not private persons. They couldn't have been private persons. They are people who are in a position to make a decision for the government of the Republic of Ghana. Who are these people? They are named as the Minister for Power They are named as advisors to the minister. They are named as persons that work in the office of the minister. They are named as persons who work for regulatory bodies and agencies. These persons were appointed by President Mahama in his first term. These persons worked for President Mahama. These persons are persons that are members of the National Democratic Congress. These are persons that we are talking about. They were... So basically, the relationship between the gentleman that has been convicted in America and these persons, and it's not because he discussed with them the possibility of payment of bribes. No court to do that. And therefore, my colleague on the other side has clearly misunderstood what we are dealing with. We are dealing with a gentleman that has been convicted in the United States of America for paying bribes to persons in authority. This is not the first time this is happening in the Republic of Ghana. It has happened over and over again. Are we saying that we should leave it and let it go without dealing with it so that Ghana will be continuously embarrassed on the international plane? The fundamental question that we have to answer, all of us, is that why is it that domestic security agencies keep missing this point, but international agencies are the ones that are getting this exposed?
Right, a point well made. And my question to you is, does the minority have any idea who the cited relative of then-President John Mahama could be?
We are asking for the inquiry. It is not something which should be to the benefit of merely the minority, but the whole of Ghana. How do we get it done? It is through a public inquiry.
Right.
Because, you see, it is not merely to have people punished. It is also to look at our institutions of state, and how they do not, how they are not able to deal with or discover these matters. But they are only discovered by international bodies.
Okay. Right, Nana Ajay Bafuwa, thank you very much. Adam Sinanu is an anti-corruption campaigner. He's joining the conversation right now. Adam, briefly, there seems to be disagreement between the NPP and the NDC whether the Attorney General should play a central role in the investigation and possible prosecution of the persons cited in the U.S. court proceedings. Who do you think, or which organization do you think, should be made to handle these investigations with regards to the Ghanaian officials who were cited in the U.S. court proceedings?
Well, first of all, just to say that I cannot subscribe to the description of competency or lack of capacity that is being ascribed to the AG. I think that, out of respect, that would not be appropriate. Having said that, in terms of who should investigate, I think that the OSP is seized with this matter. And historically, they are the entity we set up to look at such issues, especially where they involve persons who are related to the government of the day. So if you ask me, let the OSP continue with investigations and get to prosecutions where it is found necessary.
Adam Sinanu, thank you very much for your time this evening. He's an anti-corruption campaigner. Let's move on to other stories.
Tonight, the National Road Safety Authority is demanding urgent safety upgrades on the Ofanko stretch of the Accra Kumasi Highway after Thursday's crash killed 11 people and left 13 others injured, including a 15-year-old who may require both legs to be amputated. Planning and Monitoring Director of the National Road Safety Authority, Felix Owusu, says inadequate signage and lighting on the stretch are among the concerns requiring urgent attention.
Before 4, now then it started here. And I make a farm car as of a second power. The metro, I'm say, Tipe Biabu Yebua, and to Miss Eddie, Miss Mababe, to Medriano, Anna, a Kaiser, police car, Neddy, Essia, Way, I'm sorry, Nipple Wood, a coin, Nankani, and Tibuya. The police car, Neddy, a dinner spent the first one, a white.
Michael was there when the crash happened. In the early hours of Thursday morning, a journey along the Accra Kumasi Highway ended in tragedy. Another driver who witnessed the collision describes what happened in the moments before, during, and after the crash. Eleven people died, 13 others were injured. And as the scale of the tragedy becomes clearer, members of the Ghana Private Road Transport Union arrived at the scene searching for one of their own. They were trying to find out whether their colleague was among those caught up in the crash.
Well, the accident had led to some heavy gridlock on this stretch. This stretch will be leading to most parts of Accra and will be heading from Pokwase. This is the Ofanko stretch.
We also need our street lights to be functioning. Okay, so if the street lights are not functioning, definitely they can also lead to some of the crashes we see, especially with pedestrian knockdowns in the greater Accra region. So it's a concern to us as well. But so we want to use this medium to call on the authorities, i.e. the road agencies, to make sure the various street lights we have, or all the other stakeholders who matter in this, to make sure all the street lights are functioning, not only in Greater Accra, but all over Ghana.
The Ghana National Fire Service, working with some security agencies, including NADMO and the Ghana Police Service, is working to ensure that there's easy flow of traffic on the stretch. Osman is the Deputy Director of Operations for the Ghana National Fire Service.
We really need to take our time in doing this. We are doing that in conjunction with the police. You know, it involves multiple vehicles, so even including a police vehicle, as we can see here. Yeah. So we are still on it. I think, you know, most of these things, I think there was one particular vehicle that happens to be like a commercial vehicle, you know, where we have passengers in them. And the effect was very devastating, actually. And, you know, this is a highway. But I think somehow along the line, there was one stagnant vehicle on the way that I'm sure resulted in all this. We are yet to confirm that, but these are what we're hearing at the moment.
Yeah. From the Ofanko Pokwase stretch, I am Stephen Menta for Joy News.
Moving on, Joy News checks today show 8 out of every 10 tricycles plying major roads in Accra are doing so without number plates. And that's a direct violation of the law that the National Road Safety Authority calls very disturbing. We'll be hearing from our reporter who has been on the road shortly. But first, joining me in studio is my colleague Jason Day to explain what exactly the law says about the use of tricycles and the requirement for number plates. Jason, what exactly does the law say?
Well, Gemma, under LI-2519, which deals with the Road Traffic Regulations, Section 175, Subsection 1, it stated that the rider of a commercial tricycle or quadricycle shall not ride the tricycle or quadricycle for a commercial purpose without a valid license issued by the licensing authority. In fact, the law goes on to state that the rider of a commercial tricycle or quadricycle shall ensure that the rear number plates of the tricycle or quadricycle are visible at all times, Gemma.
Thank you very much, Jason Day. Joining me via Zoom is my colleague, Nat Moko, who has been on the ground and observing the situation on our roads. Nat, briefly take us through what you've observed on the streets of Accra. Unfortunately, we don't have Nat Moko on the line, but as and when we get here, we'll bring you that interview. Now, there is a brewing legal tussle between the Sechi Dumasa Community Bank and the Sokori Mampon Assembly in the Ashanti region over an alleged unlawful demolition of the bank's building for the government's 24-hour economy market. Management of the bank argues the assembly acted unlawfully pending the determination of an application before the courts in Kumasi. Emmanuel Brightquake reports that the bank now operates from a makeshift stall with all of its assets running into millions of cedis completely destroyed.
On Monday, a security task force from the Asokori Mampon Assembly raised down the banking structure together with other shops and homes in the enclave for the construction of the 24-hour economy market for the municipality. But the bank says this was in spite of applications pending a determination by the courts. According to the management of the bank, the assembly for the past months held a series of meetings with occupants of the land, including the bank, over concerns for relocation or a possible integration into the market's project. However, their concerns were refused, compelling the bank to resort to the courts over a land they lay claims of ownership. Management say the assembly acted without an official eviction notice. Dr. Dixon Oseyesibe is the counsel for the bank.
Even if you want them to move, it's a matter of talking with each other, which they started. Right, they started. But the position of the bank was that either you integrate our building into the 24-hour economy project, which to me it is possible. They have not been fair, they have trespassed, and we think that the court have to take that matter up.
My colleague Emmanuel Brightquake, who from the Ashanti region, filed that report. Let's speak to Asokori Mampong MC Ben Abdallah on this. Welcome to News 9. Did you sanction the demolition of the community bank?
Good evening to your listeners and viewers on the various social. That allegation is a palpable falsehood. The municipal assembly, led by my good self, has not sanctioned any demolition exercise. And the press statement that we issued a few minutes ago attested to that particular fact, that we did not sanction any demolition exercise.
So who then did?
Good question. Directed at the wrong people.
As the MC of the area, you should know what is happening within your jurisdiction. Are you not aware of the person who demolished a community bank within your jurisdiction?
The MC, with the greatest of respect, doesn't go around in the dead of the night to look out for people who intend to commit wrongs. And so it will be very difficult to invite me into such a discussion as to why, as the chief executive of the area, I did not find out who did that. That place is a project site. And I mean, like I told you early on, it's a good question directed at the wrong person.
What about the 24-hour economy market? We are learning that that's where the area where we had the community bank is where you intend to build the 24-hour economy market. Is that true?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct.
So if you intend to build the markets there, then in also means that you were in charge, or you were the one who actually demolished the building.
So is it a statement of fact you are making, or is it a claim? Now, for the benefit of your listeners, let me give you just a little background about the whole issue. When the assembly eventually decided that the particular site in question, the Abuabo number one market site, was going to be used as the site for the construction of the 24-hour economy market, we engaged all stakeholders, the bank in question inclusive. In fact, we engaged the traders over there, those who operate their trade within shares, those who were within the local shops, even houses. The site housed was home to two big houses. We engaged all of them, including the bank officials. And we told them that that place had been earmarked to be the site for the 24-hour economy market. And in that meeting in September of last year, almost all the stakeholders we invited actually applauded the idea and said that they were in full support of the redevelopment of that market so that they will be able to trade and trade well. Because that area is actually described more or less as the central business district of the municipality. And the volume of human traffic over there is very huge. And so everybody felt that if an edifice of this nature should be put there, then it will go a long way to boost trading activities over there. And so they all were in support of it. And it's on record, actually, that eventually when the demolition exercise happened 9 months later, your sister station actually went there to interview the chairman and leader of the market women. And he is on record as having said that they were in full support of the exercise of the project because the assembly had extensively carried them along and engaged them. And so that is on record. Now, this bank actually said they will suggest that we leave their structure there. And we made it very clear right at the outset that it was not going to be possible because the designs were very standard. And so it wasn't going to be possible. And so they should find a way to relocate. Initially, when we engaged them in September of last year, we told them that they should move by December. The only concerns that the various stakeholders raised at the time were that the time frame was too short. My sister, the exercise, the demolition exercise, did not happen in December as we earlier told them. It did not happen in January. It didn't happen in February. The exercise eventually happened in June and July of this year, 2026. That was 9 clear months after the engagements. And even because of this bank, we decided to do a phased demolition exercise because we realized that others were moving, they were not. And somewhere in April, when we went and marked off the properties, they actually came with a plea that the mark that had been done on their structure, even though they agreed they needed to move, was potentially going to result in a bank run, which we agreed with. And so we told them that, oh, okay, while you take steps to relocate, which will be very fast, try and see whether you can get a sheet of paper to cover that mark so that we don't want a situation where, marking of the property will result in panic withdrawal. And so they thanked us and they left. And because of their recalcitrance, their intransigence to move, we actually decided to phase the demolition exercise. And so we did the first part in June, and we told them we were going to do the last bit of it, which was supposed to be the site that their structure sits. Later in June, that is at the end of the month in June. When we're approaching the end of the month in June, all other structures were giving way. Some were taking off their roofing, and they were still there. And so when we decided to eventually shift it to first week of July, we exempted their structure because we still felt they were a bank. Even though they were being intransigent, we still felt we needed to consider them because they were a bank, and their situation was quite different. And so we did that and did the demolition. And by the way, that is the standard procedure that the assembly adopts in all its demolition exercises. We don't do any clandestine demolition. We don't do that. And so,
in effect, you sanctioned the demolition exercise. Let me bring in the CEO for the Sechidumase Community Bank, Michael Kwabna Efriye. You've heard from the MC. You were aware that the MDA was actually going to demolish your structure, not so?
Gemma, thank you so much, and good evening to your listeners. The background the MCE, the Honorable MCE, has given you confirms the fact that the Assembly ordered the demolition. And that is a fact we need to establish. The bank has not in any way proved recalcitrant, as he is alleging, or intransigent, as he is alleging. The Assembly told us in the first meeting of September that the place is earmarked for 24-hour economy market, just as he has given the history. And our request was that, can we have a look and make suggestions so that the story building, which is not rented, it is actually built by the bank. The Assembly recognizes our legal occupancy because sometime about 33 years over, the bank signed an agreement to be there between the then Asuka Submetro. So our presence there is known to the Assembly, and we've been paying all the required operating permits and all that to the Assembly, which they are aware. The fact of the matter is that you made it known in the last meeting of November 2025 that the consultant has indicated to you that it was possible for you to inculcate our building in the design. Fast forward, December last year, we didn't hear anything from you. From January up until May, where you marked our buildings, and you, the Honorable MCE, asked us to go and clean the markings because we were still engaging. The bank and the Assembly were still engaging. You directed us to go and cover the markings. Then you called us in a meeting of 1st June, and you said that you have an alternative site for us. And the management of the Assembly, the management of the bank, together went to the alternative site at Asumase, close to the Wayek area. Then a day afterwards, 2nd June, I wrote a letter on behalf of the bank to you that we appreciate your effort, but we will need some time for regulatory approval, and therefore give us some time. However, our request that you look at our building constructed by the bank over 33 years, look at how you can inculcate that in the new market design. It is in the meeting of 1st June that you told us the consultant has indicated to you that it is not possible. Then you reply our 2nd June letter, dated 10th June. Then in 10th June, you say it is not possible. 2 days after that letter, you deposited laterite, sand, and stones at the entrance of the bank. You impounded our 2 vehicles. You cut power supply to the building. You did all this, and now you are denying knowledge of that. Then the bank that you say they should move, and then you have given notice that you move. The consultant says it is not possible for us to inculcate your building in the structure, so move. You state that in the letter of 10th June, about 2 months ago. Then 2 days later, you obstruct business. We have paid business operating permits, but your actions and inactions are not permitting us to operate our business. Gemma, from 12th of June, we have not been able to access the building and the content therein. How do you expect us to move when you have blocked us access to our own building? And we think it is not fair. And we are going to court. The matter is in court, yet to be determined. Then the demolition has occurred on 10th August. Is this lawful? Mm.
Let me bring in, hold on for me, Michael Kwabna-Efriye, hold on for me. Let me bring in the deputy ranking for the Local Government and Rural Development Committee of Parliament, Alexander Kwesi-Akwa. You've heard both sides, but the bigger picture is that some infrastructure across the country have been demolished to pave way for the construction of the 24-hour economy. Have you received concerns from individuals or groups like Sechi Dumasi Community Bank about the situation going on?
People who have suffered demolition like you are describing now, we are hearing for the first time what is happening to this bank, even though some other places have suffered same calamities. But we know that some assemblies are under pressure to find space to site this 24-hour economy market. We engage the southern sector of MMDCs and a place like Tema told us of how difficult it was for them to get a land to plant the market. And some other assemblies are also complaining. So we know it's a kind of pressure on the various chief executives.
What is your committee going to do about this?
Well, I think that it's becoming one too many. We have had stories coming from the north. We have had stories coming from the Ashanti region. We've had stories coming from central region. A couple of assemblies have these issues. And so we with the leadership of the local government committee, would have to sit down and perhaps get a briefing from the minister on exactly how these things are happening, because it's expected that for such an important program, if this program is that important to government, then government would have to should have taken into consideration the siting issues, where these markets are going to be sited. You know, this 24-hour economy market has already attracted a lot of backlash, because there are places where they don't actually need these markets, but because perhaps the government campaigned on 24-hour economy, and there must be something to show that its campaign promise has been fulfilled, the assemblies are under pressure to make do with every land that is available to put on these structures as markets. We think that we have to look into it.
Thank you very much. Alexander Akwesiakwa is the deputy ranking on the Local Government and Rural Development Committee of Parliament. Michael Kwabena Frie is CEO of Sechi Dumasi Community Bank. And Asokore Mampong MC Ben Abdullah, thank you so much for your time. It's now time for business. George, we are first here with the latest. George.
Well, coming up, government signs agreement with large-scale mining firms to secure 30% of total gold output as it moves to triple the country's international reserves. And Ghana's economy grew by 5.1% in May, fueled by strong activities in the services sector. The business news on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Business. Welcome to the new world of business. Kingdom Books. You're welcome back to Business on Newsnight. The government today signed a landmark agreement to large coal mining firms to sell 30% of their total output to the state. The initiative is part of government's plan to boost the country's gold international reserves to 15 months of import cover under the Ghana National Reserve Accumulation Policy. Finance Minister Dr. Tofosun, who signed the agreement on behalf of government, said this move should help boost Ghana's reserves.
I'm happy to inform you that today's signing of the Memorandum of Understanding signifies that we have successfully come to an understanding, mutual understanding, that that policy will be implemented effective the date of signing. And so it is my honor to inform the people of Ghana and all our stakeholders that government has arrived at an understanding with the miners and the chamber to implement the GANRAP agreement.
Chief Executive of the Ghana Chamber of Mines, Dr. Ken Ashibe, initialed the agreement on behalf of mining firms in the country. Other signatories to the agreement are the Governor of the Bank of Ghana, Dr. Johnson Isiama, Minister of Lands and Natural Resources, Kofi Bua, and Chief Executive of Gold Board, Sammy Jemfi. Now, Gold Board is optimistic the new financing model that it has rolled out will help make it self-sufficient in its funding operations. It's coming after the Bank of Ghana halted funding for the institution, raising concerns whether Gold Board can manage without the Bank of Ghana. Sammy Jemfi, Chief Executive of the Gold Board.
The BOG is proposing to be our fiscal agent, but we have not agreed. The BOG is proposing that even though they have exited the domestic good purchase program and will not be the ones financing it, they want to be our fiscal agent to raise funds for us and then settle. And we are saying, no, we want to do that ourselves because we don't want any conversations about Gold Board and BOG in the media again. The Gold Board has come of age. It has a systems, the human resources to raise its own funds, buy gold, sell that gold, okay, deal with any incidental costs beyond the baseline program implementation costs budgeted for it by government, and handle this trade efficiently in a way that generates the much-needed foreign exchange, help to build reserves, while at the same time generate profit. And so far, so good.
Sammy Jemfe is chief executive of the Ghana Gold Board. The economy grew by 5.1% in May this year. Now, that's according to the latest monthly indicator of economic growth and activities, as a report released by the Ghana Statistical Service. There is more in this report.
According to the Ghana Statistical Service, the services sector was the main driver of this growth. It actually contributed 51%, followed by industry with 23.8%, while agriculture contributed 21.2%. In terms of sectorial performance and growth, services again led the pack with 7.2% growth, followed by industry, which grew by 4.2%, attributed to growth observed in the mining and quarrying subsector. Agric sector's 3.6% growth was driven by the crops and livestock sector. The Ghana Statistical Service further explained that the 5.1% growth showed that, or in layman's term, for every 100 Ghana cedis of activity in May last year, the Ghanaian economy produced about 105 Ghana cedis, showing signs of positive growth. However, a careful look at the numbers showed that when you do a year-on-year comparison, that is May last year to May this year, then growth actually slowed.
And that is a Business Desk report. Now, the Central Securities Depository Ghana says investors can now monitor their security holdings and access key account information through a new application called Investor Connect. Head of operations at the depository, that is Fosina Coleman-Folsen, says the new app forms part of efforts to improve service delivery and give investors easier access to information on their investment.
The public that we are serving can have direct access to the CSD, or a quicker access to the CSD, by going through their brokers. But now with the investor portal, they can have a quicker access to their brokers as well as to the CSD, because before you had to physically walk to your broker or your bank to be able to have a CSD account and buy some securities that are on the market. But with Investor Portal, it means that you can sit anywhere, anytime, and initiate the onboarding process for your broker or a bank to pick it up and facilitate the eventual opening of a CSD account.
Head of Operations at the Depository, Faustina Coleman-Folsen. Now, MTN Ghana has recorded the first batch of winners of its under 30 anniversary promotion as the company seeks to celebrate three decades of connecting customers in Ghana. The presentation today saw three persons win brand new Toyota Land Cruiser Prado vehicles, with six more vehicles and cash prizes up to 30,000 Ghana cedis up for grabs. Speaking at the presentation, Chief Customer Experience Officer at MTN, Jemima Kotewals, said the promotion is designed to reward customers whilst encouraging the use of its voice, data and bundles as well.
Today we've given away three brand new Land Cruiser Prado vehicles, and we have six more to give away. So there's still opportunity for customers, as the promo is reset every month. So they should keep spending, keep using, and they stand a wonderful chance of winning one of these vehicles. But that's not all we're giving. We're also giving a lot of cash prizes, all the way up to about 30,000 Ghana cedis. So there's a lot of, you know, cash rewards in there, as well as lifestyle rewards. So customers stand a chance to win various prizes based on their spend. So I would just like to encourage everyone that as long as you spend, you stand a chance of winning. It's credible and it's genuine.
Jemima Kotewals is Chief Customer Experience Officer
at MTN Ghana. And tonight on PM Express,
right,
Business Edition. You know, recently there was reports about Accra Brewery Limited trying to shut down the operations because they feel they are being taxed too much or taxed on their products. But this evening, we are asking whether indeed the tax structure in Ghana is suffocating or is not aiding or helping local manufacturing firms. Or basically, they are just not being that strategic in responding to competition. I'll be engaging the chief executive of the Ghana Association of Banks,
right,
that is Sechuma Kabwa, on PM Express, that is chief CEO of the Association of Ghana Industries, as you look at the manufacturing firms and Ghana's tax system on PM Express, 9 p.m. on Joy News and all our social media platforms.
Well, thank you very much, George. Well, you're still listening to News Now here on Joy 99.7 FM in Accra and our numerous affiliates across the country. Remember, you can be a part of our show by sending us a WhatsApp on 055-1111-997. Let's bring you more stories this evening because former Scholarships Secretariat Registrar Kingsley Ajiman is fighting back allegations of shady scholarship deals after Ghana's High Commissioner to the UK, Sabazita Benson, said the Secretariat made questionable payments, including allowances and accommodation for spouses of some scholarship beneficiaries in the UK. Dr. Ajiman's lawyers say the High Commissioner's latest claims are part of a pattern of what they describe as wild allegations against their client. While investigations into the matter are still pending, the High Commissioner made the allegations in a series of social media posts claiming that the Secretariat paid for spouses of selected beneficiaries in the UK. Listen.
Look, these are documents from the Ghana Scholarship Secretariat. All these. And if you see the rot, if you see the rot in this, you will be amazed. All these are scholarship documents that I received from the Ghana Scholarship. Look, I cringed reading these documents. I cringed. The rot that happened under the former registrar. This particular one is one woman gets, I don't want to mention names.
Okay.
I'll say princess.
Poor and needy people.
No, they are not. Name princess. Mm. She gets a scholarship. She goes with her children, three of them.
Well, that's Ghana's High Commissioner to the UK. My colleague Michael Ashale is joining me in the studio with details of the former registrar's response, who has challenged those allegations. Michael, what has he been saying?
Well, this is from the lawyers that represents the former registrar, Sakodi Ebafor Iwine Partners, and it says that our client maintains that he executed his work as the former registrar of the Scholarship Secretariat with utmost diligence and therefore denies any wrongdoing. Furthermore, as the High Commissioner herself has acknowledged, investigations have already been initiated into the allegations of corruption surrounding the awards of scholarship during the tenure of the previous administration. In the circumstances, the High Commissioner's resort to the media to publicly berate our client rather than allowing the appropriate security and investigative bodies to discharge their mandate is regrettable and unwarranted, Kenneth.
Oh, thank you very much, Michael Ashale. Thankfully, we have the Commissioner to the United Kingdom, Sabazita Benson. Madam Commissioner, thank you very much for your time this evening. You've made serious allegations about how scholarships were awarded under the previous administration. What specific evidence do you have to support those claims?
Mm.
That's quite interesting, Madam Commissioner. And you specifically mentioned payments for spouses or scholarship beneficiaries, including accommodation and allowances. Can you explain to me how these payments were authorized and who benefited from it?
Some had his, some had the
hello, can you hear me? I'm hearing feedback.
Yes, I can
yes,
hear
I can
you,
hear
please.
Hear you, please.
Yes. Agency that they used, all the processes that they went through, three companies, and most of the time it was just one company that starts with V who got all the contracts. Of all the tickets, their tickets were paid in full for all the families. Their visa fees, premium visa fees, and I can tell you that premium visa fee is about £500, 8,000 Ghana cedis for premium visa fee. They were paid. Yellow fever card. Yellow fever card was included in the whole package. And I have all those documents, so I don't know what he's talking about that is false. There's nothing false about the documents I have. It emanates from his office.
So now that you've made all these allegations, and of course you supported those allegations with evidence, as you've told us right now, what happens?
What happens? I'm calling on the NIV to expedite action. Because at the moment, I am faced with a debt of 35 million that I have to pay students here. And the students are going through a lot. Some of them, he didn't pay their tuition from 2020 to 2025. He kept bringing people. He kept bringing people to the UK. He wasn't paying. We came into power in 2025, and we paid £3 million out of the debt that he left. But we have the list there. From 2020 to 2021, 2022, 2023, he kept paying students up. He wasn't paying. And these students were coming. And the point I was making, the example I made with the families that were brought in, that if we had, if management had been prudent enough and had stuck to just awarding scholarship to students who deserved it and had not brought all the families to in addition, we would have been able to pay some of these debts. I wouldn't be having this conversation with you if you had done the right thing.
Okay. Right. Thank you. Thank you very much for your time this evening. That's Ghana's High Commissioner to the UK, Zita Benson. Let's do sports now. And Benaya is here with the latest. Benaya, what's up in sports?
So the Minister for Sports and Recreation, Kofi Adams, says government does not owe the Black Queens any outstanding per diems following the players' protest with unpaid arrears and concerns about inadequate support. Now, head of the Intercontinental Playoff Clash against Ivory Coast, where the place at the FIFA Women's World Cup at stake, the Black Queens demanded payment of outstanding bonuses and per diems while accusing the government of neglect. In response to this, now the sports minister, who was speaking earlier today, says the government does not owe the players any per diems.
Thank you very much, Benaya, for bringing us sports.
All right, thank you.